Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hour number 3 live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, KJR in Seattle joining us, 9:50 a.m. Good to have them aboard, my hometown, or the Pacific Northwest, my hometown, 2 hours from Seattle. I can remember the first baseball game I ever went to was the first Mariner game. I'll go Rain Man here, 1977, King Dome. They played the Angels, and Frank Tanana was on the mound.
How do you remember this stuff?
I can remember the Mariners' entire lineup. Bob Stinson was the catcher. Diego Segui was the pitcher. Danny Meyer first. Julio Cruz second. I think Craig Reynolds or Jose Baez short. Bill Stein third. Lee Stanton was a DH. Rupert 2P Jones in center. And then there was a right fielder, big guy. I'll get to his name later.
Oh, Leroy
Stanton, I think, was the DH or the left fielder. You know, Davey Collins was a left fielder. He was a former Cincinnati Red. Steve Braun.
Of course he was the Cincinnati Red.
Yeah, Steve Braun was out there as well. Steve Braun from the Minnesota Twins. I remember that too. Yeah. And then our pitcher was Diego Segui was the opener. Then Enrique Romo was on that staff. Gary Wheelock. Yeah, I have no life. I remember it. And the Angels, I ran into, this is so weird. I ran into Bobby Gritch like 5 years ago. Like he wanted, I was at some event and Bobby Gritch was there, and the Angels team had Joe Rudy, Gene Tennis, Bobby Gritch, and I ran over to Bobby Gritch. I said, first baseball game I ever saw in my life, Seattle, 77 Mariners, and I think he had a couple cocktails in him, and I think he had me removed by security. He thought I was attacking him. Who's this kid talking about a baseball game in 1977? Emily, you're Bobby Gritch. He was like, security came, cuffed me, took me out. No, remember it well. When you grow up in the Pacific Northwest, all my teams were awful as a kid.
So how does that work, you claiming Seattle like that? Because people in Pittsburgh get very territorial about
Well,
that.
No, I grew up 2 hours.
If you're in the Pittsburgh area, everyone claims they're from Pittsburgh, but like, yeah, you're not really from Pittsburgh.
So I grew up 2 hours from Seattle, 2 hours, 15 minutes from Portland. The difference was I got Seattle TV because I was in Washington State. So King TV, okay. Cairo, Como, Channel 13. So that's the TV I watched.
Because obviously we have the other side of the state and there's Philadelphia.
So are you qualify as a Pittsburgh girl?
Well, I was born and raised in Pittsburgh.
Okay, so I wasn't. I'm 2 hours. I'm rural. I'm right on the beach, fishing village. So nobody claims me, but I Seattle teams were my teams. The only good team when I was a kid growing up, the only one that wasn't, the Sonics were good in the 70s, and then the Huskies were good in football. But it was a lot of, you know, our teams were terrible. We had expansion teams in the 70s, and they weren't much better in the 80s.
I don't know that there were people think that like the idea of dynasties is something that just happened with player empowerment. There weren't a lot of great teams. Like dynasties would stay in control for a long time, even then.
Well, because players didn't join forces.
Right.
So they can just marshal their forces and move together. Your dynasties were in college, like Michigan and Ohio State. When I was a kid growing up, Wisconsin was terrible. So Michigan and Ohio State were in the Rose Bowl every year.
Well, also
occasionally.
If you were winning at the higher end, it really affected the money so much more. So if you were a lower end team, it was so much harder to overcome that.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a college team, everybody has amazing facilities.
Here's one thing you and I know for sure. And this is that I always laugh about this. Society is always trying to tax the rich. And I am statistically, I would qualify as a rich guy. And I always say, I'll pay taxes and I won't complain about it. Just don't demonize my wealth. Don't go Bernie Sanders on me and tell me that I'm the problem with America because I just started a company up to 24 people in a year. I'm employing people. I'm not firing them. So I'm not bad for the economy. But I always say this. Sports is a little bit like politics and that all politicians, right, are like, you know, got to even it out, take money from this group, give it to that group. Sports is doing the exact same thing and it's not working anywhere. In my entire life, sports has been trying to avoid dynasties, and there's never been more dynasties. In college basketball, we just had Kansas face Carolina in the championship game. Two blue bloods. Women's basketball, UConn had the biggest dynasty in the sport. They lost in the final, but they were back in the final.
Right.
In tennis, women's Serena dominated it for 15 years. In men's, it was Nadal, Djokovic, and Federer have dominated it for 15 years. In college football, it's the SEC, primarily Alabama, and then Ohio State, Clemson. It's like three teams. In the NFL, we just had a 20-year dynasty with the Patriots. In the NBA, you get dynasties. They just don't last very long because players, you know, egos and stuff. So you had the Heatles into the Warriors. And, you know, it may be Milwaukee now. Certainly they'll be favored along with Phoenix. So I just always laugh. We're always trying. So if you were trying to do something and it just, you couldn't make it work, it's not supposed to work. If you look at technology today, if you're trying to even the scales of finances, good luck. It's even all the moves politicians have made, the rich are pulling away. Why? Because you can make money faster with technology. Instead of just trying to tax and tax and tax the rich, what you should do is incentivize these tech companies to help the poor. Not the individual rich guy. Go to Apple, go to Oracle, go to Facebook. And, you know, my theory has always been, you go to the biggest day of the year for tech companies. They have trillion-dollar days in the stock market. And the government steps in and says, on this trillion-dollar day, it'll be an amnesty day. That money goes to the American poor. So we will give all you companies on that, like every day, every year, there's one or two days where like Silicon Valley makes $1 trillion, like eight companies. Take that money. It will not be taxed. You can use half of it for your company's growth untaxed. We won't tax it. Half go into a bucket for the poorest Americans. And then you give them $2,000 a month. You can stay on that for at least 2 to 3 years. And so the point being, if you're just trying to tax rich guys, they'll move. They'll move states. They'll move to countries. It's not working. And in sports, this incessant need to create parity, it doesn't exist.
Well, because you can't regulate how good people are at their jobs either. Like the well-run organizations, the people with good GMs and good ownership and, you know, reasonable fan bases, yeah, and all, you know, all of those things tend to win. So what are you penalizing? Like, are you going to make Sean McVay not be able to study as much as everybody else? Like, some people are just better at their job than other people.
But
they like to work with other people who are also good at their jobs.
Like, the NBA has done something, and I think it hurts the league. It's this thing they call, two words, competitive balance. You don't have any, and you never have. In fact, the only era you had it was in the 70s when the Blazers won a title, the Sonics did, the Sixers did, Milwaukee, Golden State, the Knicks, eight different champions. It was the least watched the league ever was. Fans like stars and star teams. We like them. Now, we're getting tired of Alabama, but we like, by and large, if a dynasty lasts 3 or 4 or 5 years, we kind of like it. The Niners, the Cowboys with Aikman. We don't want it to last for 20. The Patriots got boring. Alabama's boring. But it's the most popular golf ever was in the 10 great years of Tiger. We don't want to see a different winner at every major. So, like, if you were trying to lose weight, let's say you're a guy, and, you know, your family was big, and you're at 220, 215, and you would love to be 195, and you've done the South Beach diet, the Atkins diet, and you can't get there. Well, then you're not going to be 195. Be happy at 215. Go eat some prime rib. You know, try to get some exercise. Try to be as healthy as you can. You're probably just not built to be 195. You're going to be 220. Try to be the healthiest 220 you can be, right? Like, sometimes there are just things, if you're trying to do something for 20 years and it's not working, it's not meant to work. Like, I try to be more patient. Nope, not worked. My entire life, I'm 58. So what I try to do is be empathetic. I try to, in my impatience, which I can't solve, I never have. It's been a New Year's resolution 48 times. It doesn't work. I'm impatient. It's the way my, ADD works. So what I try to do is get out of situations where I need a lot of patience because I can't be patient. So instead of trying to be patient, it's fool's errand. I'll just get into situations where I don't need a ton of patience and you solve it. So leagues, stop trying to engineer parity. It does not exist. Sean McVay is better than your coach and Les Snead is better than your GM. And California is really attractive to rich, young, good-looking athletes. They like playing here.
And every once in a while, you're going to have a Joe Burrow show up in Cincinnati.
And crush.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. I mean, by the way, in the NBA, Dallas Mavericks won. Raptors won. I think Milwaukee's going to win. The small markets win. They don't win as much, but they win. But whenever I see politicians tax the rich, they've been saying that for 70 years, and the rich are getting richer. Create amnesty days with massive Silicon Valley companies. Say, hey, you made $1 trillion today. You get to keep half untaxed. The other half untaxed goes into a fund to help the American poor. Because that problem's never been solved in my life either. Poor Americans. It's never been solved. So let's do something else. Because what we're doing's not working. And the gap's getting bigger. Homelessness is worse. I mean, like we've solved to a large degree poverty. Food. Like world hunger is not nearly as awful as it was. Like that part, we've done. There's some measures here. It's worked. But like poor people, what we're doing is not working. And taxing a rich guy in Silicon Valley is not the answer, because that money will be wasted by politicians. We all know what politicians do when they get more money. They waste it. They don't use it efficiently. All right. Meta Sandiford Artest is going to join us in studio. Haven't seen him in a while. Good stuff.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
One of the great defensive players in league history, an all-star, 17 years, six teams, Meta Sandiford Artest is joining us. And I just asked Meta, I said, Sandiford, your middle name? He said, it's my wife's name. And your wife is Canadian from Vancouver, which I think is the most beautiful city. I've said this multiple times on the air. It's the most beautiful city in North America.
It is.
If I could live there, I would. It's a little gloomy. I grew up in Seattle, so I'm used to the gloomy stuff. And you love it as well. You said you may move back there.
Yeah, we was thinking about it. My wife's from Vancouver. We've been married 4 years and together 10 years, and we love it. Whistler, the Vancouver Islands.
Oh.
Yale Town.
Oh, and then Gastown, Yale Town.
Gastown.
Great food city.
Yes.
They also have, what's that called? Is it Granville Island? That little.
Yes, the artsy place.
The artsy place?
Yeah, I walked there a couple times.
Yeah, that's what you do. You walk there, yeah. Stanley Park. That, if you've never gone, I'm not going to be a tour guide here.
It's okay, do it.
If you've never gone to Vancouver, BC.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, it is. I told you the last time I went there, my wife and I are in the hotel. We looked down, mm-hmm. and it was like their Times Square, and they were making a movie. They were making like a Superman movie, and we sat there for an hour having coffee in the morning watching them shoot scenes of like a superhero. I think it was Superwoman or one of those movies. Yeah, it's like a big, by the way, Canada now is a big hub for shooting movies.
Yeah, big hub for shooting movies.
You shot a movie there.
I did. That's how I met my wife. I was there with Nancy Grace, my girlfriend Nancy Grace, and I was doing a movie with Nancy called The 11th Victim, and I met my wife. I had a couple of days off, and we met. Had a nice spot. That.
All right, so let me ask you this. Lakers fired Frank Vogel this morning.
I just heard when I came here.
So he was their sixth coach in 11 years. I mean, Meta, the turmoil, it never ends. Do you think Vogel was the issue?
So one, I want to say, send some praise to Frank for winning a title in L.A. Yeah. So I want to thank Frank Vogel for winning a title. And really getting it done quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and then also I would have to say this season was very unfortunate, and they had to do something, right? Because you can't go into next season the same way, even though I thought it could have worked out. But, you know, with the losing, with the lack of defense, you know, and Frank Vogel is a defensive guy, but it seemed like it just wasn't like meshing. So it was very unfortunate, you know, very unfortunate because he's such a good guy.
You know, in the NFL, you can cut players, you can trade them. But in the NBA, if you're bad,
yeah,
it takes a long time to get out of that quicksand. You can't just trade anybody whenever you want. You have to inherit bad contracts. I'll throw a trade at you.
Okay.
And you tell me if it's nuts. So Joy has already heard this. So when Anthony Davis came back after the bubble title, he came in out of shape. Okay, that doesn't sit with me. Like, is it? You can do a lot of things.
Right.
You're coming out of shape. You're not committed. So he's not really a leadership guy. He's not like you, a fiery guy that galvanized. He's just talented. So Golden State's got an issue. Klay Thompson came back. He's expensive. And him playing is getting into the way of Jordan Poole, who's emerging as a star in this league.
Right.
They want him on the floor 40 minutes a night.
Right.
Hard to with Clay. Takes away shots. You call the Warriors. You get Anthony Davis.
Okay.
We get Clay Thompson. James Wiseman, the young guy that can't stay healthy because we need size back.
Okay.
And a draft pick. And if you're the Lakers, Anthony's probably the best player easily in that group. But can you run it back again? He can't stay healthy. Is that trade crazy?
I'm gonna say we can't get rid of Anthony Davis. Yeah, because look how he played when he got back this last stint. If he comes in shape next year, we don't want to be the ones that say we traded AD, an in-shape AD, right? AD, you know, he signed a big contract. He won a title, signed a big contract, rightfully so. You know, he came in out of shape. That happens sometimes. He's 27 years old. So that means he can push it this summer and really get in shape. It's not like trying to get in shape at the age of 30, you know, and trying to get in shape next year at the age of 31. You're talking about a 27-year-old. So I think he admitted it a couple times that he was not in the greatest shape. And I think now is the time. Take off 2 weeks, go have a good time, and get right to work. No way. Keep Anthony Davis.
Okay, so you're a big fan. Listen, the Westbrook stuff doesn't work. He doesn't play off ball. Right. He's an on-ball guy. You can't put him off the ball because he's not an elite shooter.
Well, you can put him off the ball.
You're not very good.
You can teach him.
He can't shoot.
Listen, they got three superstars on that team.
Well,
so it's
how about two and a half?
No, Westbrook is a superstar.
Dude, he can't.
Westbrook had one of the greatest seasons in NBA history. He had one of the greatest careers.
Yeah, but that was 5 years ago.
I know, but everybody's like 5 years ago. You know, it just happens like that. Look at Carmelo. Carmelo was almost done, and he's back.
But Carmelo, you got to give Carmelo credit. He said, hey, I've got to understand what I am. He was willing to come off the bench.
That's correct.
And he was excellent. Westbrook still sees himself as a star that runs the show. It's not what he is.
But just it takes a year of transitioning, right? It's like when Phil Jackson used to put together these Chicago Bulls teams. It took a year or two for you to learn a triangle, right? It's the same thing. Westbrook has it even more difficult because he's not as athletic as he was, and he's playing in a system. You know, LeBron James is basically a system when you're playing with LeBron
James.
That's
right. He is.
So he has to get used to playing with LeBron. This is going to be a LeBron show, right? And I think it is possible. It just needs to be watched on film, you know, day in and day out. He needs to see where he could be effective at. I would love to keep Westbrook because I believe he can be so effective, you know, if you just kind of show him where he could be effective and where he's not effective at.
So you're willing to bet on guys like AD gets hurt a lot and LeBron's older. Could I not make the argument? You're not going to trade LeBron because I do think he still has great.
He's incredible.
Yeah, but we are getting to a point now. He gives you about 55, 60 games a year.
Right, right.
That's not the same LeBron.
It's not the same, but it's a guy that you can win a title with. You see what I'm saying? It's a guy, 55 games, 60 games. I think that's fine, but he'll be there in the playoffs, right? He needs to take that rest throughout the season because who's going to stop LeBron in the playoffs, especially after the season he had this year? You know, and you're talking about making a team better with better players, so that means less work for LeBron James, right? So potentially, you know, we could be in the finals next year.
You're very optimistic.
Well, this LeBron averages 30 points. AD was just not the greatest AD. But look what happened when he came back. And Westbrook had great numbers but didn't play great. That shows you what type of team this could be. All right, Westbrook could improve in certain areas, right? And then AD could improve in certain areas. And then now we rocking.
Let me ask you about this. So what am I to make of – so you and James Harden had some tiffs. So I like Harden when he's engaged.
I like James. James is great.
So I think he's a great player.
Yeah.
But his style, he's very ball-centric. He has to have the ball in his hands. Well, Embiid, his ball usage is super high.
Right.
Can they coexist together long-term?
Well, right now in the league, everybody has to coexist. It's too many stars. It's too many amazing players, especially how everyone is training. If you look at all these trainers, they're like, dribble the ball, dribble here, make a move here, step back. Everyone's training like that. So players have to be able to adjust, you know, and have to be able to play off the ball. Everyone has to be able to play off the ball. Embiid has to be able to play off the ball, right? Davis and LeBron, everyone has to be able to play off the ball. You have to work on your game in the summertime. And that's why Stephen Curry is the one of the greatest winners in his last decade, because he can play on the ball and off the ball. He's giving you the blueprint.
Yeah. Do you buy we were talking about this earlier. So Kevin Durant and Kyrie are – that's probably the best big closer and small closer in the game. They're just great right. with a minute left. I don't need Ben Simmons to shoot. If you told me Ben Simmons is going to come back for the playoffs and I'm going to get 8 minutes a half,
right.
distribute and defend.
Right.
And when you play Boston, go guard Tatum. You play right. Miami, go guard Jimmy Butler. I do think there's a world where, in a weird way, I don't know where his mind is at right now, but in a weird way, Simmons is a perfect fit with Kyrie and Durant. Because he's not confident as a scorer.
Right.
But his assets, length, defense, and distribution, are exactly what they need. Do you think he can go all year not playing, just working out in the gym, and then insert him into the playoffs and be effective?
Well, he's young enough. You know, usually when you sit out a week or a month or 2 months and you're older, you get stale. But he's young, right? So him sitting out, it'd take him 2 a week to get back normal. Right, and he has so many intangibles, you know. So he can play defense, he can pass, he can push it, he can rebound, right? So that type of stuff can add value. But whether he's ready or not, that's a whole nother story. But then going back to your point when you was talking about him shooting, Ben needs to take in rhythm shots, right? When you take in rhythm shots through the flow of the offense, it puts the bigs in a position to rebound, offensive rebound. If you don't take the in rhythm shots, then it kind of makes everything stagnant.
So you don't need to create shots for him, but in the rhythm of the offense, if you've got it, shoot it.
Yeah, you have to shoot it. You have no choice. Because in the rhythm of the offense, the ball is flowing, the defensive is moving, shot goes up. Now, people like you know, the bigs could position themselves for offensive rebounds.
So let me ask you this. So Adam Silver, the commissioner, came out last week and said, I don't have a solution, but our stars miss too many games. I have my own belief on how you fix it, but you were never a guy that I had to convince to go play. Why do you think it's happened where suddenly stars, they're missing 20 games, and it's like a lot of them are missing 20 games? It can't just be injuries because they're not all hurt.
Well, this is a new era. You got to give it a little bit of time to settle. It's just like when the NBA set new rules. When the NBA put in the new rules, the zone, so we can get overseas players to play in America because Americans was real tough. Only a few people could deal with Americans.
Right.
And it took us time to adjust. Now we're here shooting threes and we adjusted. Now you got another issue, these big contracts overnight. You're talking about guys getting $100 million, $200 million, $300 million. You know, within a couple of years, these type of contracts have been given out. So guys is chilling right now.
They're feeling themselves.
You should be feeling yourself. like you know, we need to figure out how this is going to work with guys making $500 million and supposed to come to work to work. Like, how do you do that? How do you say, I'm coming to work yeah. hard today?
So what you're basically saying is, I mean, let's be honest, pro athletes are 29 years old, 28.
Right.
So if you, the average fan says, I can't believe you make all this money and don't want to play. And you're saying is, if you were 28
yeah.
and suddenly your finances tripled,
yeah.
you'd want to take more vacation time.
You're going to take more vacation time.
Yeah.
Right? So you got to just figure out how can you, if you were the person that signed the contract, how can I get myself up motivated every day to give 100% on that court, right? And to go to practice, not only the games, but practice. And I think it's going to take a little adjustment. And I think it'll happen, but it's not going to happen like overnight.
Okay, go give me your first big contract. That year, did you get lazier a little bit?
No, I was in the gym a lot. I stayed in the gym. So my first big contract, I got suspended my first year, my first big contract. But I was in the gym.
So it didn't affect you, per se.
My average went up 7 points, you know, and we were winning. And, you know how that go. I was dominating everybody at my position with the exception of LeBron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So going into the playoffs, I said Phoenix is the best team I've seen this year.
Yes.
Now, they also—
With two MVPs. Only MVPs we should be talking about, Chris Paul and Booker. That's it. They're 10 games or 12 games better than everybody.
When you see them, when you watch them, what do you see?
I see a old school beginning Warriors, a team that plays together, a team that moves without the ball, a team that executes shell defense, executes the fast break, movement, back cuts, face cuts, everything. And you see a young DeAndre Ayton, you see a little bit of Tim Duncan over there. This is a really smart player. This team is just dominant.
Yeah, good chemistry. They play hard. Now, Devin Booker, some compare him to a Kobe. Kobe was better at creating his own shot.
Right.
Devin's also not a great three-point shooter. Who is Devin? I mean, I like him a lot. Who is he?
He's a winner. He's showing that he's going to be a winner. You got to win a title to be, you know, a full out winner. But he's showing that he's a winner. He's showing that he can play, and he plays the game the right way. Moves well without the ball. Can play off the ball, or he can play on the ball. He's a real player.
Now, Chris Paul barks and yells at guys.
Right.
It seems to me that would rub people. It would be good initially because they were losing before him.
Right.
But
they were losing before him.
A lot.
Yeah.
But are you surprised how, you know, Chris's style can be abrasive to players, but they love him in Phoenix?
If it's direct, like if you do something wrong, if I tell you, hey, why did you do that? And that made you a better person, you know, they're going to respect that. It's the other, you know, if you're just bullying someone or just getting on somebody with no, you know, merit or whatever, then yeah, I'm not going to respect that. But Chris wants to win a title. So I'm sure when he gets in that locker room or if they go to dinner, he's probably saying, you know, I'm sorry if it came across the wrong way. But it's clearly working.
Did you ever have a teammate like that was very verbal?
I was very direct.
You were.
Kobe is very direct.
Okay, let's say you and I are playing together.
Oh, yeah.
So I just took a terrible shot and you come over to me. What would you say?
I mean, it just depends. I'm more of a body language. So it's hard to. People take shots. I don't really care about that. It's just the body language, you know, the hustle. You know, we're trying to win and you're not. That's when I had a big issue.
And you'd confront guys.
Oh, 100%. Anybody and everybody.
How did they take it?
Some people don't take it well. Some people do. But it's not really my concern how you take it. You know what I'm saying?
That's why I love bringing you on the show. It's not. That's the way I should look at it.
And that's how I'm going to coach, too.
I didn't know. Do you want to coach?
Oh, absolutely I'm going to coach. Not one, I'm going to.
So are you going to do G League, college? What are you going to do?
Well, in life, you do things you love.
Right.
Right, so I want to be a head coach one day.
I mean, what's interesting when I bring you on is you are – you're very patient. Like, you really are patient. Like, the prime example that I had never thought about, and it's actually very bright, is that the NBA has not stumbled upon, is now paying athletes. This is happening in the NFL with quarterbacks. Guys are making $50 million a year. And so your takeaway is, you just got to give this a couple years. You give young people the kind of money you're getting. It's like, I want to do this and this and this.
Of course.
It's harder to get people to work. If this company pays me $50 million, you won't be able to find me. I mean, I don't even know where I'll be. It won't be in the studio. It's great seeing you. Now, by the way, X versus X Sports. It brings Meta's basketball community to the NFT and blockchain world. Check out X versus X Sports on the App Store and Google Play. I love seeing you. You make me think. You're really always a great guest.
Thanks for having me.
Meta Sandiford, our test. Joy Taylor with the news.
Thanks, Joy.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Joel Embiid clinched the scoring title yesterday. He's the first international player to do it, as well as the first center since Shaq in the 99-2000 season.
He's the first international player to win a scoring title?
To win the scoring
title. Is
that
true? Yep. Did Dirk Nowitzki never win a scoring title, I guess?
He locked it up when Giannis was ruled out of the Bucks' final regular season game, so he finished with 30.6 points per game. LeBron was as close as competition at 30.3 points per game, but when he sat out the last few games, obviously with the ankle injury, he failed to qualify because he didn't meet the 58 games needed. Embiid currently has the second-best odds to win the MVP at plus 250 behind Nikola Jokic at minus 330. I am fully on the Joel Embiid MVP bandwagon. I don't understand year to year what the criteria is for the MVP.
There isn't one.
It's not that I don't think that Jokic has not had an MVP level season, but I don't like the idea that you win the MVP and then you have a better statistical season, so you should win the MVP next year. If it's a stat award, then it's a stat award, and we don't really have to discuss anything.
Also, your team has to be really good. That seems to me that if you're really valuable, you got to be like a top two or three seed. Generally.
I mean, we showed the list of MVP winners over the past, what was it, 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
Russell Westbrook, they were a six seed that year. And he also really appears to be the aberration. And that was a statistical season.
Yeah.
That was why he won the MVP. If you're looking at the standings, the Nuggets are a six seed in the West.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
So,
got to win a lot of games to be MVP. Got to be valuable.
And we feel that the Western Conference is the weaker conference this year.
Yeah, I think the Eastern Conference has more depth. I don't think they necessarily I think both conferences have one real champion. Like Milwaukee and Phoenix feel like good enough to be NBA champs. And then I think the East has about five other really nice teams. The West has about two. Like Golden State is all about injuries. I don't know if they'll be healthy. They could be. I'll tell you, my dark horse remains the Clippers. I think we're totally sleeping on the Clippers.
I just don't think they have enough star power to make a real run. For opposite reason, I think it's the Nets. The Nets are our team that I can't see. Because they're series. They're long series. So when you don't have the consistency going into the postseason and your stars haven't been where they need to be, yeah. Then I think that depth matters.
I want to see Brooklyn play the Celtics so badly because Boston gave you everything in the regular season. Great effort. Brooklyn did not. It'll be so disheartening for Boston fans if this star-driven diva team goes and beats you.
That's been nothing but a drama
model of consistency in Boston, and they play defense, and they care, and they die for loose balls. And they get vaccinated, and here comes Brooklyn. Yeah, we got better players. It'd be so disheartening.
It will be. So Scottie Scheffler has won three of his previous five tournaments and moved up the rankings to number one in the world before playing in the Masters. And he dominated the tournament all weekend long. Yesterday morning before teeing off, he said he cried like a baby and told his wife he didn't know if he was ready for this and that he felt overwhelmed. It's not surprising. He's 25 years old.
He's a kid.
It's crazy.
He played really good golf.
He finished at 10 under overall, three shots better than Rory McIlroy. It's his first championship win. The ending was incredible because he missed his last.
Well, he
two
was
cuts.
Nervous. He was
You know, I'm watching this, and I obviously this is a huge deal, but I can't even imagine the pressure.
Oh.
Of having to hit that putt.
If you go to a public course and you have a 4-5 foot putt. For the average guy, and I put $1,000, I lay out 10 $100 bills, it will get into your head. You will not hit the putt. Imagine winning the Masters as a golfer. Of course he missed those putts.
I mean, it's the crowd is there's all quiet. Everyone's looking. You're 25. It's the biggest moment of your career. But it was a great watch and a great win. He said he will play at the Open in July. He's not sure if he's going to take part in the PGA Championship in May. But really, really great tournament all weekend for him. So Rob Gronkowski has been continuing to let it be known that he is yet to decide if he's going to play next season. If he does, it would only be with the Bucks. And he was asked whether or not he's had any contract talks with Tampa. He said, that will start to decide if I want to play. There's no reason to do that while there's still a decision to be made first. It's all about if I decide to.
I don't think he is.
He's not rushing into any decisions. It's feeling like he's not.
I don't think he is.
He had played 12 games, had six touchdowns, 802 receiving yards last season.
If I was the WWE, I would absolutely go get him and say, listen, I don't need you every week. Give me five appearances this year. To me, he is such a character, so funny. I would go. I mean, you're not going to make him Roman Reigns, right? You're not going to make him one of the guys.
I mean, like you want to talk about schedules.
Yeah, you're not. I'm not saying you're Charlotte Flair. You're not there every week.
Right.
Give me six appearances this year. I would go get him tomorrow.
Gronk has a lot of options, but Gronk is a really good businessman.
I tell you, working with him briefly on Sundays on Fox, impossible not to like.
Incredibly likable.
And you cannot.
He's always himself. He is a very consistent personality.
Savvier than you think.
Yes.
He kind of plays the silly, you know, he early in his career, he played the party boy. And then you meet him and you're like, no, he doesn't spend any of his money, by the way.
No, he doesn't. That's what I'm saying. He's very smart. He's going to have lots of options after football. But I also think because he played He played the position so demonstratively, and because he was so big and so fast, it was impossible for defenders to take him down. Obviously, his injury history is extensive. I think that year off really showed him, like, hey, I can, like, feel really good, and I have plenty of money, and I have nothing left to prove, and I'm already a Hall of Famer. So I wouldn't be surprised either way, but I do wonder how it's going to affect Tom, because it's such a comfort space for Brady to have Gronk out there.
He's like his red zone weapon of choice.
Yeah.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
Tired
news.
Of waiting around for hot water? Choose Navien Instant Hot Water, spa-like comfort. You can save hundreds on local rebates. Go to tanklessmadesimple.com. Navien.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm George Reister, host of the Reister or Wrong podcast. This is the intersection where sports, business, society, and pop culture meet the truth. Absolute fire on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Facts only. Make sure you check your feelings at the door because no BS is allowed. We keep it 100. This is where real conversations happen. Listen to the Reister or Wrong podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Favorite store, Faherty. Good news. Their best-selling Legend sweater shirt back in stock, all new colors. Go to FahertyBrand.com. Use the code HERD20 for 20% off. All right, we're going to play Champ or Chump. All the NBA playoff teams. Joy will introduce them. Do I think they have a chance to win a championship or eventually have a fatal flaw with no chance to win a championship, Joy? Here we go.
Miami Heat.
Chump. They don't really have a go-to score. Jimmy Butler, really not a good... Tyler Hero, by the way, struggled in the playoffs last year. Jimmy Butler shooting 40% in clutch time situations. Really good bench, but benches shrink in the playoffs.
Milwaukee Bucks.
Champ. Giannis has become the best or second best fourth quarter scorer in the NBA. The Milwaukee Bucks. That's Miami. The Milwaukee Bucks can be champs. Yeah, right here. Also, Brooke Lopez got healthy for Milwaukee. They're better defensively, better rebounding. Milwaukee's a champ.
Celtics.
Celtics are a chump. Way too reliant on Jason Tatum. 13-22 record in clutch time games this year. So again, if Tatum's off the floor, they're an incredibly mediocre team.
Sixers.
Unfortunately, chump. Harden struggling, reliant on Embiid, terrible transition defense. Worst in the league since James Harden arrived.
The Toronto Raptors.
Chump. Who's their go-to scorer? Pascal Siakam's a good player. Fred Van Vliet, Gary Trent. They've got good players. They play really hard. Translation, very good regular season team. Not built to win a lot of series in the playoffs.
The Chicago Bulls.
Chump. Injured bad after the All-Star break. Lonzo Ball won't play. Just don't have the depth and not playing well.
Brooklyn Nets.
Unlikable, but champ. Kyrie now full-time available. Leads the NBA in fourth quarter scoring. KD's the best pure scorer in the playoffs.
The Cleveland Cavaliers.
Year away, so now they're a chump. Young team, don't have a go-to score. Jared Allen got hurt. And in 18 games, they've won only seven since he got hurt. He's really valuable.
The Atlanta Hawks.
A chump. Too reliant on Trae Young. I mean, they don't have a second score. Nobody on the team after Trae Young averages over 16 a game. So that is a classic. You know, they'll be fine. They'll win a couple of playoff games. I don't think they can win a series.
The Charlotte Hornets.
A chump. Way too reliant on LaMelo Ball. Terrible defensive team. When he's on the court, they're a plus 100. When he's off the court, they're minus 63. He gets in any kind of foul trouble, nicked up, no chance to even win a game.
Phoenix Suns.
Champ, do everything well. 33-9 in clutch time games. Best shooting team in the league. Best chemistry. When they play fast, they're deep but not reliant on their bench like Miami. Best team in the league, I think so far, easily.
Memphis Grizzlies.
Chump, nothing against them, but would be the youngest team to ever reach the finals. They're a bunch of 24-year-old kids, And they're fun. They're probably 2 years away from being a finals team.
The Warriors.
Hate to say it, but chump, Draymond, Klay, and Steph have played 11 minutes together this year. They're a lot like Brooklyn last year. We like the players. They didn't play together. And even though they have some historic chemistry, they're either too young at spots or too old in spots.
Dallas Mavericks.
Everybody else likes them. I'm going to go chump. Not a good defensive team. Really struggled second half of the season defensively. Now Luka's got a calf strain. What have you said about calf injuries? You never think they're serious. The average calf strain, you'll deal with it for 3 weeks. I had one. They're brutal. You think you're over it? You're never over it.
Utah Jazz.
Chump. You know, listen, who's the second scorer after Donovan Mitchell? Don't have one.
The Denver Nuggets.
Too many injuries. Chump. Jamal Murray got hurt. Michael Porter got hurt. Jokic is great. But again, wildly reliant on Jokic. Chump.
Minnesota Timberwolves.
Youth. Chump. Too young. They are first or second youngest team in the league. I think they're the youngest and Memphis is second youngest. So chump.
Clippers.
This is my dark horse. Champ. Okay, listen. They made the playoffs missing Kawhi and Paul George all regular season. So the coach I love, the depth I love, it's intelligent. They have playoff experience. They also have more versatile wing defenders than any team in the league. So they can just throw bodies at a Phoenix. I think they'll give Phoenix trouble. I think Phoenix will beat them. This is the most versatile roster, in my opinion, with Phoenix in the entire NBA.
Pelicans.
Chump. Brandon Ingram gets hurt too often. Zion hasn't played. So they're fun to watch, but they're not consistently healthy.
Spurs.
Chumps. They're going to have to win multiple play-in games. I mean, they missed playoffs back-to-back years. They don't have a lot of star power. Good coach, good system, but I think there's limitations on what they can do. Champ or chump. So I only have... How many teams do I think can win the championship? Milwaukee, Brooklyn.
Four.
Phoenix.
And the Clippers. So you're basically saying seeding does not matter. You've got the 7 seed Nets and the 8 seed Clippers.
That's it. We've had so many injuries to star players. I don't think seeding matters this year. Veteran teams can win on the road. I'm not worried about that. So Phoenix is easily the best team I've seen. So if they didn't get to the finals, I'd be shocked. If Brooklyn knocked off Milwaukee and Simmons is playing, I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be like, yeah, kind of a weird year. Kind of a weird year. CFOs that get it, get it. CFOs that don't. Head to netsuite.com/herd, H-E-R-D. Special one-of-a-kind financing. So speak for yourself here on FS1 is around the corner. Welcome again to KJR, 950 AM in Seattle, my hometown. Pacific Northwest. Lock it in. We will be back tomorrow in LA. It's the Herd.